All right, everybody, let's bring it back in. Bring it back in. So we're just going to do a really quick poll of the room here, okay? Who loves a good rom-com? Raise your hand. Oh, wow, okay. I did not see that going. Okay, so there's a few people. All right. If you love it, like, what's a good one? Ava, what's a good one that you like? When Harry Met Sally, that's classic. Who else? There's a couple people over here who said they like one. Now everybody put their hands down. Like, I don't want to say which one I like. Grace? 10 Things I Hate About You. Yes, yes, classic. Caitlin? 51st Dates. That's good. That's good. Okay, for everyone else, I assume, raise your hand if you're not a rom-com person. Some people are just not voting. What, you just don't have opinions on things? I don't believe that. What's something we should watch instead of a rom-com? What do you like? What do you like, Colin? Die Hard. Appropriate. Appropriate. What else? What's one other one? Non-rom-com. What was that? Lord of the Rings, that'll kill some time for you right there. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I asked about rom-coms tonight because this semester we're studying the book of the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon. And it's a poetic book of wisdom found in the Old Testament. And what it does is it follows a couple as they progress from being single to dating and ultimately to joining together in marriage. And the point of this book isn't to help you find the one, nor is it meant to help you become the one for someone else. No, it is a picture and a reminder that every season we find ourselves in on the relational spectrum, whether we're single, we're dating, we're married, each season is a unique opportunity to experience and extend God's love. And we're in this series not because dating is the most important thing, not to necessarily help you find a spouse, not even because this is young adult ministry and that's what you have to do to keep your credentials up is do a dating series every now and then. No, we're in this series because studies and statistics show that although the longing for commitment, for relationships and intimacy has never been stronger, navigating the complexities and the intricacies of romance and relationships has never been more confusing or, frankly, more difficult. In 2019, Pew Research released a study describing how dating has become harder than ever. In 2019, before the pandemic isolated everyone, before we became more addicted to our phones, before the saturation of dating apps and increased competition reduced our entire being to a marketing strategy consisting of a cute pic and a brief description, right? That was 7 years ago. And rather than improving, dating has only gotten more difficult. So difficult, in fact, that in her book, Rethinking Sex, Washington Post columnist Christine Emba describes a rise in what she calls heteropessimism. And this is pessimism or doubt that dating is even possible today, that that's even something we can engage in successfully in our culture. And we started off tonight by talking about romantic comedies because they tend to make love and romance seem so simple, right? Guy meets girl, girl meets guy, and one of two things happen. They either fall in love immediately because, well, he's the male lead and she's the female lead, and somehow they're both incredibly attractive, so naturally, there you go. Or they start off as friends or enemies, and eventually, through some wild, though irrelevant plot, they realize that what they've been searching for all along is each other, right? Aw. Cue the dance music, release the doves, happily ever after, it's great. Movies, TV, books, social media, they all make dating and romance seem so simple that it could happen to anyone. And there's a lot of money in this idea, so much so that we've made dating a massive entertainment industry. We see this in the explosion of reality dating TV shows. To name a couple, Love is Blind, Married at First Sight, Temptation Island, Perfect Match, 90 Day Fiancé, The Ultimatum, Cosmic Love, which is a show based on dating based on your cosmology, which I just thought was wild. Not to mention Love Island, Love on the Spectrum, Farmer Wants a Wife, and of course The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and their spinoffs, Bachelor in Paradise and The Golden Bachelor, just to name a few. And that's not even all the ones out there. But shows like this live on the premise that there's someone out there for everyone, And with enough grit, determination, and ruthlessness, you too can find love in about the same amount of time it takes to film a full season of TV. The problem is that although this seems so simple in stories and in media, real life rarely works out that way. And across the board, people are becoming more and more pessimistic and hopeless about the dating scene and less sure about how to even go about it. Dating has become difficult, and it's also become increasingly complex, complicated by the intense pressure that we feel in our world. We live in a culture and a society where it seems like everywhere you go is some billboard, some ad, some reminder that life is about pairing up and finding the one. Not only do we have our own internal desires to contend with, but there's this obsessive and sometimes intrusive cultural pressure to meet someone and find happily ever after. Not to mention the pressure we feel from parents, from family members, from friends who've recently gotten married, from random people we meet at church, all curious about a relational status as if that were the only important thing about us. Dating has also become more risky. Numerous studies and articles over the last couple of years have noted a rise in anxiety and fear around dating. Although across the board, studies and surveys show that women tend to prefer for men to be the initiators in romance, the line between what is creepy and what is romantic has become so incredibly thin and subjective, leaving many men far too worried about being perceived as creepy or weird to take any kind of intentional move forward. The Economist did a survey amongst young people regarding dating, and they asked about various different surveys and said, hey, do you think this is socially okay, or is this like a taboo? And when asked, is asking someone out for a drink, is that considered sexual harassment? Some women said yes, but 25% of men, one out of four men, said yes, asking someone out for a drink constitutes sexual harassment. Men have largely lost the confidence to woo a woman out of fear that their initiative will be seen as malicious or desperate or simping. And they are terrified of giving someone the ick for trying too hard. On the other end of the spectrum, there are lots of guys who have not been loving in how they have pursued and treated women. And this has caused lots of pain and trauma and trust issues. And it is a scary thing for a woman to meet up with a complete stranger, especially if you've only really talked over a dating app and you've never met in person. In a world of catfishing and vague intentions and fake social media, they don't really know who exactly they're getting on the other side. Dating has become more risky financially, emotionally, and physically. No guy wants to be just an avenue for a girl's free meal. No girl wants to be someone's sexual tool. And no one wants to get their hopes up too high only to be ghosted or rejected. So what do? We just give up on the human race? Like 2026, we're calling it time of death. We gave it a good run, but we're moving on. Thankfully, there is a better way than what we see in our culture around us, a way that restores dignity to dating. Turn with me to the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon in your Bible, starting in chapter 2. Tonight is about restoring dignity back into the dating pool. And I hope that sparks some excitement in you, because that's really where dating starts. Dating should be exciting. It should start with excitement. Song of Solomon, chapter 2, starting in verse 8, it says, "Listen, my lover is approaching. Look, here he comes. He's leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My lover is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the window, peering through the lattice." That's lattice, not lettuce, just for clarity. She starts with, "Listen, do you hear that? He approaches. He's coming." She's excited about his arrival. She's not like, oh, he texted again. She's not rolling her eyes. She's not sighing. She's excited to see him. And this sounds like a really obvious thing, like, duh, wouldn't you be if you were dating somebody? But this is something that we've actually lost in our modern culture. There's a really weird posture in modern dating that's almost like reverse chicken. It's not, let's see how close we can get before we collide. It's, let's see who can remain more aloof, more indifferent, more undecided the longest. Who can wait the longest to text or call after a date? Who can avoid catching feelings the longest? And there's this misplaced idea that whichever one of you remains the most detached maintains the most power in the relationship. And just as a quick aside, relationships, whether it be romantic or friendships, are not about maintaining power. They are about giving up power to those who deserve it. Not to everyone, but to those who deserve it. And if your primary goal in a relationship is to maintain power, you're going to cause a lot of pain and unnecessary heartache for others and for yourself. We don't see a detached woman playing it cool here. She is excited for the approach of her beloved. Why? Well, because as we talked about the first week and last time we were together, he's a man of proven good character. She's seen it. Her community has seen it. He's a man who is trustworthy. And we're going to see why as he pursues her. And notice the excitement isn't just one-sided either. Did you notice the verbs that she uses to describe him coming? How she describes the way that he's approaching. He's leaping, he's bounding, he's like a strong, nimble animal. He isn't just like taking his time and slowly walking up, staring around, looking at his phone. He's not sitting in the driveway or parking lot texting her to come out. He isn't late because he was finishing up watching the game or finishing his last round of video games with the boys. No, he is actively moving towards her. He is excited to see her, and it's obvious. One of the basic foundations for a dating relationship is chemistry, that you actually like being around each other. When she tells a story, you're not rolling your eyes or checking your phone, even if you've heard that story a million and one times. When he tells a joke, you smile and you laugh, even if it's not really that funny, sometimes. You miss each other when you're gone. Not in like a codependent way where you can't exist without the other person and you spend all your time with them. That is not healthy. But there is a healthy desire to look forward to the next time you can see that person. Ask yourself, at the end of a date, when you part ways, do you feel a sense of relief? Is it exhausting to be around that person? Is it exhausting to talk with them? Do you enjoy your conversations with them, or are you just physically attracted to them? Dating is a time of evaluation. It's not meant to be the first step in a lifetime commitment. And sometimes we do this in the church. Somebody goes on one date or they hang out with one person for coffee and everybody swarms in wanting to know when the wedding is. And it's like, y'all, just chill out. Give me some room. Let this thing breathe and grow naturally. But dating also isn't meant to be a hobby. Some of us have far too casual of an approach to dating. We see someone attractive and boom, we instantly ask them out. We don't know anything about them other than they look good, so we're going to ask them out. We want plans for the weekend, so we hop on the dating apps and line up a couple dates so that we won't be alone. All of our friends are dating, so we've got to ask somebody out. We've got to be out there too because we don't want to be the odd one out. Dating serves a purpose. It has a goal, an intention. Dating is about evaluating, is this the kind of person that I could potentially see spending the rest of my life with? There is an end goal in mind. Even if you're not ready to get married immediately, you're evaluating if this person is someone who could be marriage potential down the road. And this is why it's so important, y'all, so important to refrain from introducing sex into a relationship in the dating phase. We're going to talk about this more in a couple weeks, very in depth, but what sex does is it disrupts the evaluation process by muddying our ability to evaluate and understand our own feelings. In sex, your brain literally releases chemicals meant to bond you emotionally to that person. If you introduce this too early, this good gift can wreak havoc on your ability to be objective and to understand and navigate how you actually feel about this person and the way they treat you. This is also why we need input from our community. Notice how throughout this book, both the man and woman are speaking to an audience. These aren't just internal monologues, just thoughts that they keep to themselves. They are telling these things, describing these qualities, these attributes to other people. Modern dating has largely become a privatized thing. Our community doesn't really get to help us evaluate potential companions beyond like swipe left, swipe right, right? We leave that up to the dating apps to figure out, hey, who would be a good match for me? And the first time we meet this stranger is in a dating format. We go on dates alone. We meet them alone. We may talk about who we're dating to others, but rarely do we draw them into our trusted circles on a consistent basis. Maybe they go to a party here or there, a social event here or there, but there's not this regular bringing in of our community and sharing in their community. Our community is meant to help us evaluate these people. How do they treat others? How do they treat our friends? How do they treat their friends? How do they treat us around their friends? Are they consistent in public and have the same values and morals that they do behind closed doors and vice versa? Are they the same? Now, talking about community and dating, I kind of feel like I have to bring up dating in church circles, right? We're at a church, we're talking about this, that's like a big elephant in the room, right? I've seen this done really, really well. I've also seen this end tragically and horrifically. There are two unhealthy tensions that often come up when it comes to dating in the church, all right? And this is not a theological term, but I kind of think it should be. I call it the meet and sweep, okay? What does that mean? The meat, sometimes we can treat the church and church functions like a meat market. Like we just show up with the intention to meet people. We come to the well, we go to the porch, we go to a Bible study or whatever with the sole purpose of seeking out which cute guys or cute girls we'd like to ask out. And this does a huge disservice to the church because what we are doing is turning the house of God into a speed dating arena. Effectively, we are using Jesus as our lure to find a spouse. And Jesus is not our means to an end. He is our end, full stop. The sweep, on the other hand, comes in when you date someone in the church and things don't work out. Everyone can treat it like a divorce where one person has to go to another church and the community is left to be divided up and figure out who stays, who goes. There's a lot of drama. What do we do? And this is also really destructive because it forces the community to shape itself around your dating habits and actions. Other things that matter, like equipping, sound doctrine, discipline, community that a church offers, all of those become second tier because it's about the relationships and how I'm navigating that. Again, it's using the church as a place to pursue the one rather than pursuing Jesus. Y'all, it is possible to date someone in the church, to break up, and it not destroy everything. I have seen it. I have seen it multiple times. It can happen. Sure, there's a natural adjustment period. You can't just go right back immediately to the way things were. You may not be ready to be in small group again together. You need a time to like cool off and heal and kind of reassess, readjust. But it doesn't have to mean abandoning your community and starting over somewhere new. We have to remember that the church is about fueling our pursuit of Jesus first and foremost, not a spouse, because he is the only one who can ultimately satisfy the longings of our heart. So another evaluative cue that we see is found in verse 10. It says, "My lover spoke to me, saying, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come away with me. Look, the winter has passed, the winter rains are over and gone, blossoms have appeared in the land, the time for pruning and singing has come, the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land, the fig tree has ripened its figs, the vines have blossomed and give off their fragrance. Arise, come away, my darling, my beautiful one, come away with me.'" What season is being described here in these verses? Springtime, right? Winter's gone. Cold is gone. New life is coming. It's the spring. Spring was symbolically used to describe something that is life-giving, right? It's warm and sunny. Things are growing. There's a lushness. There's a fullness of life. Here, the man is describing their relationship as something that breathes life into each other. That it's not a drag to be around each other. That they're not bored doing life together. There's not this constant drama weighing them down. That might sound really sexy in books and TV and it sells really well, but I have seen a relationship fraught with drama played out in real life, and it is toxic and it is tragically painful and nobody wins. Here, we see them spurring on life in one another. So some great questions to ask yourself in a dating situation as you're meeting someone new, as you're continuing to evaluate this person. You can ask, hey, am I a better person because they're in my life? Do they challenge me to grow in my faith? Do they help me love other people better? Do they help me see and overcome my own blind spots? Do I do the same thing for them, or is it only one directional? Do we push each other closer to Jesus, or are we actually pulling each other further away from Jesus, further away from community? Jesus calls us to be people of peace in Matthew 5:9, to be his representatives in 2 Corinthians 5:20. Every relationship that we enter in and leave should be left with a sense of dignity value. Even if it becomes clear that the dating relationship shouldn't continue, we should strive to end it with a sense of respect and care and compassion for everyone involved. We don't want to look back on our dating history or even our friendships and see a slew of broken, mangled casualties. If we do, there's a common denominator there. As hard as it is to admit, it's us. This is why we need to be intentional in discerning our own intentions in looking to date. Are we looking to date because we're lonely? Are we bored? Are we just attracted to this person physically or even emotionally? Are we looking to date because we're scared of being left behind by our friends and our family? At the heart of these reasons is selfishness and fear, because we are using another human being to make us feel better about ourselves and our own worth. And those reasons will only lead to disappointment for you and pain for them. On the other hand, are we seeking to date not just someone, but a specific person, because we've seen their good character and we're drawn to that? Do we want to be a part of celebrating them and building them up? Do we want to help them in their journey to be all they can be under Jesus? Well, that's a very different starting place. That's one that's not focused on ourselves and our desires and our needs, but on them and their good. We need to understand our intentions and be really clear in our communication. We see this in verse 14. He goes on to say, "O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places of the mountain crags, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. We need to be intentional in our communication. Fellas, this is a really big one for us, okay? It's really easy to keep our cards closer to the chest. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want to look weak and vulnerable. At the core of every man is the desire to be respected. And not respected in the sense of like being exalted or honored among all other people that we're like the most amazing thing ever. That's not what I'm talking about. But we want to be dealt with fairly. We want to be dealt with dignity, with an acknowledgement that we have inherent value and worth despite what we can produce or do. And we deeply fear losing that sense of self-respect or being shamed by others. But being willing to go first in vulnerability is one of the most loving, Christ-honoring things that we can actually do. We see this demonstrated in verse 14. He lets her know how she makes him feel. He says, I want to see you. I want to hear you. I want to be near you. Translation, hey, I like you. I want to spend time with you. He goes first. He assumes the risk of rejection. He leads and tells her what's in his heart. He isn't playing it cool and like, yeah, we're just like hanging out or whatever. Like, why? Did you think we're something more? Like, what's going on? He tells her where she stands. And this is the importance of having a DTR early in the relationship, right? Define the relationship. When Casey and I first started dating, when I first thought I was interested in her, I realized, hey, all of the time that we've spent together up to this point has been in the context of community. We were working for an on-campus ministry in college, and we were co-laborers and doing all these things, but all of our time was spent together in groups. And so I knew I enjoyed her then, but I was like, man, honestly, I haven't been one-on-one with her. I don't know if we've ever like held a conversation together, just the two of us. Can we even do that, or do we need other people around for that? And so I asked her to go with me to go see a movie, just the two of us, and I was very clear, hey, this isn't a date. I just want to kind of spend some time with you and see, like, do we enjoy each other? Do we know each other well? So we went to go see two movies. We saw La La Land, which is kind of tipping my cards a little bit there. But then we also saw the Lego Batman, so I, like, covered it up really quick, you know? We both, like, were like, hey, the Lego movie was hilarious. Batman's really cool. What's not to love? So we saw that movie. We loved it. We laughed. We still love it to this day. We just watched it last weekend. It was great. After those two things, though, I asked her to go with me to the park, and we took some time walking around there and kind of talking about where we were at. And at the end of that time, I was very clear with her, and I said, hey, Casey, I just want you to know, I really, really like you. I see XYZ qualities in you, and I think that's amazing. And I would really love to ask you out on a date. I don't expect you to say yes right now. I want to give you some time to think about it, to process it, to pray about it. But the next time we spend time together, my hope is that it will be in a romantic context, that it will be a date. And I was very clear with her where we stood. And even as we went into dating, periodically, I would stop and kind of just tell her, hey, I'm really enjoying spending time with you. Hey, these last couple months have been really, really fun. These are things that I've valued and cherished. These are some things that I've been challenged by. And I just want you to know, like, I'm still very much in this thing. I would love to continue dating you and moving a little bit more towards some more serious commitment. And she never had, and I also was like, hey, but if you don't feel that way, I totally understand. And there are no hard feelings. You can tell me. I gave her the out. I told her where I was, so that she would never have to question what's happening in our relationship. What's he thinking? Is this serious? Is this going anywhere? Are we just hanging out? Are we just dating in perpetuity? Like, what's happening here? Clarity is kindness. And that goes both ways. Ladies, men need clarity. I know a lot of you think that you're very clear in your communication. Lovingly, you are not. You are not as clear as you think you are. You are very kind, and so sweet, and so nice, and we're very thankful for that. But sometimes that sweetness, that kindness, it muddies the clarity. If a guy asks you out on a date, uses the word date, fellas, on a date, and you're not interested, tell him, politely, tell him, no thank you, I'm sorry, I don't see you in that way. Don't hurt him, don't be like, ew, no. Don't laugh at him, like, be kind. But don't go on the date to respect his bravery. I've heard several women have done this, or a guy comes up and asks them on a date, and they're like, I'm not really interested, but that's really hard to do, and so I want to, like, encourage that, so sure, I'll go on the date. No, don't do that. Because what happens in a guy's mind, if you say, yes, I'll go on a date, I think you're interested, and that it's all on me now to, like, continue your interest and keep you interested or to lose it. So if we get to the end of that date and you say, hey, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to go on a second date. Thank you for this, though. I'm not going to go, oh, I guess she maybe didn't really have feelings for me in the first place, and this was just a really nice sisterly thing to do. Thank you. He's going to say, what did I do? How did I blow this? Where did things go wrong? And we have no idea that that wasn't really your intention all along. That's not really where your heart was at or your head was at. And it's probably going to feel really, really rude in the moment. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's probably going to feel unloving, but I promise you, it is the most loving thing that you could do. Because we will know we do not have a shot with you and can move on. We'll keep ourselves on the hook. Men are hopeful creatures. We will keep ourselves on the hook as long as there's a maybe, because a maybe could turn into a yes, right? You're saying there's a chance. Like, we will hold on to that chance. Don't just say, hey, you know what? It's really just not the right time for me to date somebody. Don't say, hey, I'm just focusing on Jesus right now. None of that. Those may be true things. But again, if you're really not interested, just tell him. Just tell him. Don't trust that your body language is clearly communicating enough of where you're at. Maybe, maybe not. Use words. No, thank you. No, thank you. I'm so flattered. And hey, that does take a lot of courage and a lot of guts, and I really respect that. But I don't feel that way about you. I'm so sorry. I hope we can continue seeing you in small group and it's not super awkward. It's going to sting for us a little bit, but we'll survive. We'll survive. We'll get over it. Maybe one day we'll laugh about it. Maybe not. Maybe we'll just cry about it. But that's okay. All acceptable. Clarity and honest vulnerability are the key. Notice how also in verse 14, notice how he approaches her as he's pursuing her. As he draws towards her, how does he do it? He calls her a dove. Again, this is a poetic book full of symbolism. Doves were gentle creatures often used to symbolize peace and purity. She is pictured in the cleft of a rock. That means it's a place of safety. She's up here, out of reach, in a place of safety and comfort. And he is being gentle and empathetic. Women have been hurt, fellas. We need to be understanding of that. Sometimes you will have to work through baggage and pain from previous relationships, and that's not wrong. That's loving. He's not impatient and frustrated with her wounds. It doesn't say that he rushes to climb up that mountain. He's like, I'm going to get that dove. I'm coming for it. That's what's going to happen. No, you don't be aggressive with the dove. You go gently. With tenderness, because there is nothing more terrifying to a dove than a grown man's hands. They can bring life or they can bring death. He waits, he invites her, and he waits patiently. He calls out and waits for her to come to him. He makes it clear, I am not here to hurt you. You are safe with me. You take your time. I'm here. I'm clear about my intentions, and I will wait for your response. We all ultimately long for complete vulnerability and complete safety with others, whether that's in dating or in friendships, that I can reveal everything about myself, the good, the bad, the ugly, without fear of rejection or shame. That's what we long for. And what's beautiful is that we see how as he leads in this way with honesty, with clarity, with vulnerability, with gentleness, with patience, the language takes a shift in verse 16. The language becomes possessive as they move deeper into commitment. In verse 16, it says, "My lover is mine and I am his. He grazes among the lilies until the dawn arrives and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountain gorges." Vulnerability and gentleness in leading leads to commitment and leads to deeper intimacy. As she sees how he's leading with gentleness, she knows she's safe to love him and be loved by him and to be his freely. Greater commitment leads to deeper desire for intimacy. Textually, mountain gorges can also be translated, some of your translations may say, as cleft mountains, which is a euphemism referring to her breasts, okay? Because she knows she is safe with him, women have sexual desires as well, people, and she knows he has good character, she says, "Hey, I don't just want you to be like a gazelle on those mountains over there, but like I want you to come and enjoy my mountains." It's literally what it says. She desires him emotionally, and he's available, he's clear, and he's safe. And so that desire moves to desiring him physically as well. And we see this at the beginning of chapter 3. The first part of chapter 3 is, it's actually a dream sequence as she's asleep. Chapter 2 ends with her recognizing, "Hey, I want to be intimate with this man." And then it moves into this kind of symbolic dream sequence in chapter 3. And verses 1 through 3 describes this metaphoric sequence where she's alone in her bed and realizes, "Man, I want him here. I don't want to be alone anymore." And so she searches throughout the streets for the young man. She would not have literally done this because that would have been super dangerous, just like it would now for a woman to go out at midnight and wander the streets of Dallas. That would not be wise. So that's how we know this is symbolic. But it is a picture of her desire, her longing to be with him. And then in verse 4, "Just scarcely had I passed them by when I found my beloved. I held on to him tightly and would not let him go until I brought him into my mother's house, to the bedroom chamber of the one who conceived me." She says, "I desired to be with him, and I couldn't take it anymore. So I ran through the streets to find him, and when I did, I grabbed him with both hands, and I took him to my mom's house." My mom's house? Like, what just happened? That's a bit of a left turn, right? Again, this is a picture of her community. That as she feels ready to give herself to this man physically, to be more committed, to be the most vulnerable she possibly could, she brings him to her mother as one more check to make sure that she isn't being too rash, too impulsive. She trusts her to give her wise counsel on if this man is deserving and safe and trustworthy, that he isn't out to just use her physically, that she isn't just getting caught up in the moment of passion or being fooled. She takes him to her primary caregiver to see if he really does care about her. And the young woman gives this same caution again from chapter 2 at the end of this section. She says, "I admonish you, O maidens of Jerusalem, by the gazelles and by the young does of the open fields, do not awaken or arouse love until it pleases." She says, "I desire him. I want to be with him. I'm going to check with my community. Is he a good man? Yes. Okay, I'm going to go to my mom, my dad, whoever, my spiritual mentor, and say, 'Hey, is this a good person? Is this a trustworthy person? Can I be open and vulnerable with them?'" They say yes. She says, "Oh, but it's not time quite yet." And that's the same caution and plea that I want to end on with us in this room tonight. So as the band comes back up, this phrase, "Do not awaken love until it pleases," this encouragement, don't rush into something because it feels right in the moment. True love is patient. It is willing to wait, trusting that it's worth it. There is so much pressure in our world to just hurry up and find the one who's going to cure our loneliness, the one who will know us better than anyone else, who will love us without condition. And the painful irony is that no romantic love with another human being can ever fully meet those expectations. We crave it, we want it, it is good and right to desire that. But eventually, people will always fail us. They will make mistakes. They will hurt us. I have both caused Casey some of the most joy and the deepest pain. Our hope is not in other people. It is in Jesus, the one who will never fail us. Every season of our lives is a unique opportunity to experience and extend God's love. And the same is true of dating. Dating mirrors God's pursuit of us, of his chasing after our heart to draw us closer to his own. Jesus is the ultimate picture of a healthy, holy pursuit. Though it wasn't one that we deserved, Jesus loved us when we turned our backs on him. When we ran from him with our entire being, he chose to draw near, to come close, to give up everything he had for our sake, so that we might be lifted up, restored, and given new life and purpose beyond measure. That is the love that we so desperately crave. A love that chooses us unconditionally, without hesitation. And we trust that one day we will be reunited with the true one that our hearts ultimately long for. Until that moment, we wait, not in hopeless despair, but with open hearts and open hands. And that's how I want to end tonight. So let's stand and worship as we wait for the one our hearts long for.